Welcome to episode one of Understanding Latin American Politics, the podcast. I'm Greg Weeks. I'm a political science professor at the University of North Carolina at Charlotte. And this podcast is going to be intended to introduce everyone to what's going on in Latin America, clues to understanding what's going on in Latin America. And although in this first episode I'm going to be the one talking as I work out all of the different aspects of this medium, I'll be bringing in other guests in future episodes to get an array of viewpoints and discussion about different parts of Latin America. Today, to get things going, I want to talk about Venezuela. And anyone who's paying attention to Latin America can see pretty clearly that there is a steady stream of bad news coming out of Venezuela. And the question then is, you know, where is this leading? What kind of patterns can we see? What you know, where is this all going? And there was just the other day in the Wall Street Journal, Cajal Vias had a pretty important article about the Chinese investment in Venezuela, and particularly about how China's getting a little bit tired of basically throwing bad loans to Venezuela. And it's given $60 billion in loans and is now saying that maybe that's going to dry up. The quote that that he had from one of the officials from Chinese companies, from state companies, was that there was a clear message from the top, quote, let them fall. Now, with Venezuela, we seem to, over years even, gotten all this bad news that seems always about to fall. Something's about to happen. And yet for years and years and years, it continues kind of limping along. And the same really goes for the political part, not just the economic part, is that every so often there will be protests or there will be this turning point. And even I've blogged about this at times. Like, here's this major event coming on, and this is going to define what happens in the future. And somehow, actually, it really hasn't. At this point, it seems clear that there will not be a recall vote held in time to have new elections. If by this time, really now, it's going to be later into the spring, at least, of 2017, I would say, if there's a recall allowed at all. And if it were successful, then Maduro, Nicolas Maduro, the president of Venezuela, would have to step down, but his vice president would take over. So there'd be, you know, two more years of Chavismo. And despite even the major protests that just happened a week or so ago, there doesn't seem any sign, particularly, that the opposition is able to push the government and force this recall election or force some other kind of change. And trying to understand that, I was reading in Caracas Chronicles, of course, the main blog, opposition blog for Venezuela, Francisco Toro, and this was just yesterday on September 12th, had a blog post about helplessness. Is that, you know, he argues that there's really a sense that no matter what happens, people are conditioned to believe that you really can't change very much. He calls it learned helplessness. And so there's this sense of, well, it doesn't really matter. The opposition can't get anything done. Oftentimes the government will just pop somebody into jail. You know, that sort of puts the brakes on any sort of meaningful change. And you know, it's an interesting question. It's like, why isn't anything changing? And that's particularly important because Venezuelans are really unhappy. The Latino Barometro poll, which just came out a short while ago, showed that Venezuelans are extraordinarily unhappy. They only have 20% approval for the government. There's fear of being unemployed and remaining unemployed. 72% of Venezuelans, 72% are feeling problems with hunger. I mean, the problem with hunger is so pervasive that Nicolas Maduro actually was on TV joking about it yesterday. Manuel Reda at Fusion had this clip that showed Maduro laughing. I mean, he thought this was funny, this joke, that one of his supporters in the audience looked thinner, and he said that, you know, it wasn't necessarily exercise. Maduro himself said, you know, it's the Maduro diet. And the Maduro diet refers to people who don't have enough food because President Maduro is making economic decisions that have created shortages. And he went on further to joke that this would improve your sex life. You don't even need Viagra now, he laughed, because of the Maduro diet. So it's all great. Fewer calories, hunger, and your sex life is going to improve. I doubt very many Venezuelans see it quite that way. You know, only 6% believe that there's any kind of image of progress in the country. But so they're unhappy. But at the same time, there is a strong indication that Venezuelans, based on the polling, they want a democratic structure to take care of it. So there's no appetite for some sort of authoritarian counterbalance to what they have now, which obviously is not democratic. And so they're stuck. And that gets to what Francisco Toro was talking about with this learned helplessness, is that things are going very, very badly. They want democracy to help solve these problems. Democracy wasn't solving the problems. The country is becoming more and more anti-democratic. And that leaves the country in a position of really just paralysis, that you can have protests, and these protests do bring out a lot of people, but time and time again over years, they have not prompted any sort of meaningful change. So it's really tough to see where this is going. Most likely, if you just take what's going on in the past and project it into the future, is that this will just continue to limp along. At some point, Maduro will lose a recall election, and pretty much everybody's going to have to wait until the next presidential election. And this is especially true when you look at the international response. The Wall Street Journal editorial page, which of course is very conservative, also just yesterday published a rebuke of the Obama administration for not having done more with Venezuela. The more is pretty much left unspecified. You know, what more are we going to do? And in this case, I think there's virtually nothing that the Obama administration can do. I was just blogging today about a Congressional Research Service report that was published last month that talked about the Organization of American States. And the point that Peter Meyer, who was the article author, the point he was making was that, you know, there's a sense that the U.S. has had decline influence in the region, and particularly within the OAS, because the OAS votes sometimes for things the U.S. doesn't really want, which, you know, I guess is a sign of lack of influence, though we could also say it's just a sign that you don't get everything you want all the time, which is not the same thing as not being influential. But at the same time, there is this concern, a very real concern, and a legitimate concern, that if the U.S. pushes for everything it wants all the time, then you actually lose influence. So if you translate that to the Venezuelan case, I mean, what you really have is almost no leeway for the Obama administration to do anything unless there's really a strong Latin America initiative. So it would be perfectly possible for the Obama administration to expand sanctions. You could conceivably, I mean, if you think about sanctions now, we have them against some particular individuals, a handful of individuals in Venezuela. But you know, you could slap huge sanctions against the country in some way. Now, you know, wouldn't necessarily be effective, but that's beside the point. It's almost like, well, this is your strong stance. Well, you know, if your goal is to have democratic structures within Venezuela resolve problems, or even if your more sort of naked power goal is regime change, well, sanctions isn't going to do it. We already know that from Cuba. We know that from plenty of other countries. It would be a strong symbolic move, which is often what the Wall Street Journal or other conservative outlets seem to want, but it's not really going to get you anywhere. It's certainly not going to help the Venezuelan people. Sanctions always have a huge impact on the average person, and so, you know, it's unclear what that would do besides, say, making a big statement. Now, this is obviously also almost impossible for the Obama administration to do because it's been pushing very hard in the opposite direction for Cuba. And so from a policy perspective, it would be a complete disaster. We already have Secretary of State John Kerry talking about needing to have the recall election done in a timely manner. But you know, what else is the U.S. going to do without prompting a major backlash? I really can't think of anything. And the big problem is that there's no chorus here. Latin American countries themselves are doing very, very little to really condemn the sorts of things that the government is doing, putting major members of the opposition into prison right before there's going to be a major protest march. Those things don't get enough condemnation. Putting you know, reporters, either kick them out of the country, detaining them, that sort of thing. You don't have a chorus within Latin America that's condemning that, and if you don't have that chorus, then there's really virtually nothing that the U.S. can do unilaterally that's going to have any real impact. And so we're really not seeing much going on through the OAS. You know, there has been efforts, of course, even by the Secretary General, to have some sort of greater policy impact, but Latin American countries themselves are just not going along. Now, you do have you know, Ecuador, Bolivia, other countries that immediately condemn the efforts by Luis Almagro or by the United States to really criticize Venezuela, but there's a lot of other governments in the region that could take a stand and really aren't. Timing is bad in general because Brazil would be a natural candidate for taking a being a regional leader in pushing for change, but it's obviously such a mess right now that really, regardless of the ideological position of the president, you know, Brazil just can't do that, facing so many problems of its own with corruption, you know, covering virtually every aspect of the government. So one problem is timing, but even absent the timing, you know, there's just no voices in Latin America. And without those voices, there's very, very little for the U.S. to do. There's no sweet spot, hardly, for the Obama administration to find. There is no appetite in Latin America to have the United States government telling other countries in the hemisphere what they have to do, when they have to vote, what kind of government they should have. And at the same time, then we've got an inability, a feeling of inability at least, of helplessness on the part of the Venezuelan population itself. And so what it really looks like is that you have an economy that is going downward. You know, at what speed, I'm not sure, but it's certainly going downward. The economy is going to continue to contract. Unless something miraculous happens with oil prices. And so everybody's stuck. Domestically, there's not enough going on internationally. There's not enough going on. The government is digging its heels in, and the government has absolutely no incentive to do anything about it, you know, unless there's some sort of internal schism that's strong enough to push Maduro out. And that's something that is impossible from the outside to know. But even if that did happen, it does not necessarily suggest that there's going to be a change of government that's going to have, a major impact. Is that, you know, if internally Chavismo is split, then you're going to get some other strand of Chavismo coming in, at least until the country holds presidential elections. So I'm not really in the business of making predictions. Political scientists, with good reason, tend not to. We talk about likelihoods or odds rather than certainties. But, you know, the best guess for Venezuela is just limping forward. And unfortunately, that's going to be bad for the average Venezuelan who finds many prices out of their reach. An economy that's increasingly based on some sort of a black market. And, you know, it's really not good for the region either, because these things spill over across borders, with Colombia being the sort of the most prominent example of people going into Colombia to buy things, a thriving black market on the border between Venezuela and Colombia. So, unfortunately, there's not very much good news to talk about with Venezuela. But right now, it's one of the most important issues in Latin America, and it's going to be a major issue for whoever becomes the next president of the United States. God only knows what Donald Trump would deal, how he would deal with Venezuela. I kind of cringe to think about it. And my hunch is that if Hillary Clinton becomes president, then we'll probably see, she's more hawkish for sure than Obama, but, you know, I don't really see that she's going to change the overall strategy too much, which is push a little, talk in private, but for the most part, let Venezuelans and Latin Americans, take the lead on it. So that is the podcast for today. It's nice and short. Make them a little bit longer in the future as I have some people to talk to rather than just have me talking to myself. We'll be finding other interesting topics, countries, issues, and so for that, I will sign off and see you in the next one.